One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's good to have you guys today. What do I actually call you? Do I call you by your channel name? Or, you know,
Alex, for the purpose of this conversation.
Okay. But The Different Knock.
The Different Knock.
Yeah, which is an incredible Arsenal channel. Thanks. How long have you been doing the whole knock?
How long has the knock been going?
Yeah.
In terms of posting videos, about a year.
Right.
But I had a podcast before for like 6 listeners and then right. basically just posted a video one day with a clickbait thumbnail and
it
here
worked.
We are.
Did it work?
Yeah.
From day one?
So I posted one video about Kieran Tierney, right. which got like 6 views, and then I posted another video and put, do you remember the All or Nothing documentary?
Yeah.
I posted that as the thumbnail because I didn't have anything. I was just right. like, I'll just put that on. And it got like 300K and I was like, whoa,
that is amazing.
I was like, okay.
So I've never had a 300K video. I think that on my own, obviously. Like the most I think I've ever had was I think I'm almost 200K with the Grav and Birch.
Combined views for you, surely.
Combined
must be
career
in the billions.
Views.
Do you know what I mean?
Combined career views is high. I think
must be in the billions.
I think I'm like I'm, but that's all off other people's gravity. So I don't like count those as my own. But obviously, I've been in it.
Yeah.
Some of them I shot them.
Yeah,
but it's weird when you get that, like, and I'd imagine when it comes out of nowhere as well. Well, not out of nowhere. Obviously, you posted the video. It's not like you sort of woke up and someone went, by the way, we posted a video of you on YouTube.
Video,
yeah, yeah.
We AI'd you.
Well, wait, what was it? Don't worry. You're actually talking quite a lot of sense. Yeah. They liked it. And so, obviously, it's an Arsenal channel. I would like in this podcast, therefore, just to not grill you, like, but you know, I'm really interested in the way that you look at the team and the way that you look
Thanks.
At them, because I feel like it relates a lot to the way that I look at Liverpool, and I think to an extent you go way way deeper than I do. I think, you know, your analysis of the games, you just in general the way that you seem to look at your side, I really enjoy.
Thank you, mate.
And it is a great channel. I doubt I'm sending anyone over there. If anything, I think more people come
are.
This way. But
really
yeah, but I remember the first time that I sort of said, "Oh, I've," because it was weird. What I really judged you by was I watched one of your videos and went, "Oh, I think that, and I agree with you," and it kind of felt quite validating, and I quite liked that, and it made me feel smart. It made me feel really smart. So I kind of just want to get into it. Really, like I'm fascinated with Mikel Arteta. And I kind of want to know where you're at with your feelings about him, because I'd imagine after last season, it didn't sour them, but there is a kind of a, we didn't quite reach where we wanted to go. I guess I'm interested in how you frame all of this.
I genuinely believe, and people will maybe not feel this, but I genuinely think he's a genius.
I'm inclined to agree.
I think if you look at his career trajectory, even if you don't engage with his ideas at all, yeah, or haven't seen anything he said, just engage with the fact that Pep Guardiola called him at 30 years of age to ask him to retire and come and be part of his coaching staff. Pep Guardiola. Mm-hmm.
Basically the other genius in, like, one of maybe three or four geniuses.
Yeah.
How many football managers do you think are geniuses? Just to, because yeah, it's yeah, all well and good.
Just because.
It's well and good saying, yeah, like, I think he's a genius. I think to an extent Jurgen Klopp is, if not a genius, then an extremely charismatic character, yeah, that would, maybe his level of, you know, like, gravitas, yeah, right, is the level of genius gravitas. Right. And I think Pep really is a genius, mm, in a kind of a, mm-hmm, Picasso style. Mm-hmm. So that's two. Mm. Do you see anyone else on that level within the Premier League?
I suppose, what do I mean by genius?
What I'm saying is, what's the cutoff?
Yeah, yeah. Aladici.
He's got it.
I suppose what genius is the ability to see something before everyone else.
Vision.
It's vision, really.
That's so one of the words that I came up with when I was trying to think of what you're trying to quantify a lot of the time on your channel.
Yeah.
And all of the caveats that you have to bring out
beforehand. I'm not saying.
Yeah. And down the line, yeah, you know, yeah, maybe in a few years' time, these, yeah, kind of things come out. Yeah. But so sorry, I cut you off. He's a genius. I agree.
I think so. I think it, you know, and you may not, where's my camera? You may not agree.
Yeah.
You may not agree, which is fine. But I think from watching him, I think also, so like in 2018, my friend constantly reminds me of this anecdote. He asked me what I thought of the game at the weekend, and I was like, I didn't know we were playing. Like, I was that level of disengaged from the team, like, wow, that level. So then late Unai Emery, sounds like a disease, late Unai Emery.
He's
got deep Unai Emery.
It's terminal.
Yeah. Late Unai Emery, I was kind of turning to podcasts and sorts of stuff for answers, and then Arteta comes along and it was just such a breath of fresh air. So I also have to preface this with the fact that my journey into what I'm doing has come almost because and adjacent to Arteta.
So entirely in the Arteta era?
And no, so I was an Arsenal fan. I was 100%. I was an Arsenal fan.
No, totally. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's not in any question. Yeah. But your content making career,
yeah, yeah, has only been through Arteta. It's completely come through him.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, and I'd watch a game, but I had no engagement in the fan base or anything like that. So I like almost like jumped in the water really properly as a fan online, that sort of stuff.
Did you ever want to be on Arsenal Fan TV?
No.
Did you ever see that outside the Emirates?
I remember watching the Chris Hudson video,
right,
in 2013.
You can't even play from Ecuador.
Yeah. And yeah, I was training to be an actor. I had no connection with it. I was just like, I was an Arsenal fan, whatever. So all of this has come through Arteta's journey. So that is an important thing in terms of my view of him. But I think really one of my favorite artists broadly is a guy, and I know a lot of people don't like him, but the lead singer of the 1975, a guy called Matty Healy. And he talks about genius. And it's not necessarily that you believe you're a genius in terms of broad strokes around culture, around, you know, you could walk into any space and be like, oh, that plant's, you know, there's people who just know everything about everything. Oh, that right. plant was in Ecuador, whatever. But genius, he definitely has. I would argue he has genius, but genius, I don't think it's possible to argue he doesn't have, because he understands you can't come into a job in the way he did at the age he did, at 38 or 37 years old, completely regenerate a squad that was like, I think he's added something like 800 million or something onto the squad value at that level, and not say that this manager has some level of foresight.
Yeah.
And then if you believe that's genius or genius, then fine. But in the way I watch him operate, in the way that if you go back and watch his first press conference, everything he says happens. He's like, this is going to happen. And then everyone goes, all right. And obviously no one looks back now and thinks, oh yeah, he said that. But he he predicted it. He literally said, here's what we need to do. I need to convince the players of my ideas. Then this is going to happen. He sets out, as we're going to talk about, a five-phase plan. We're ahead of the plan. It's all working. You can't then watch that all happen and go, yeah, this guy didn't know what he was doing. He's got at least a genius, mm-hmm, a ability to see ahead of himself and go, when I do that, that will happen. And I think a lot of people in their, in whatever industry, are responding to stimuli responding to what's going on right now, which is a completely understandable way of living your life.
Yeah.
But to have that 3-5 year plan, but to also be working in the moment, that level of knowing what this action will have a knock-on effect to do down the line, that to me is senior, and I would argue because of the way he operates more generally around working with players, the way he operates in terms of, if you look back in his career, if you look at the conversations he has around other things, I start to think, oh, this guy actually, you know, when you really understand something, whatever mm-hmm. it is, you can begin to connect it to other things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you go, like, if you're an engineer, you go, and I know nothing about engineering, but you can begin to go, oh, there's principles in engineering that really apply
across the board.
Across the board.
Right. So a kind of an analogous way of thinking laterally that helps you to interpret the rest of mm-hmm. what's going on in life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that can get a little bit clunky, mm-hmm. but I also feel like, especially from what I was observing with him, and what I really loved about a video you did recently, you were talking about Mikel Arteta's drive to work and his kind of the way he speaks about taking different yeah. routes and all those kind of things. And it was that explanation, and I'd sort of seen that before, but it was your explanation that kind of opened my eyes to that explanation, which I found quite interesting because it made me realize not only is he tactically obviously very, very smart, obviously has incredible communication skills, yep. but a huge part of being a manager is telling and controlling your own narrative, your
Correct.
Own story,
Correct.
And not letting it get away from you, and not, you know, essentially being manipulative enough to an extent to almost to silence people at the right times. And you say this a lot, is like, you know, in your last video, I think you said something about he said there's 64 different formations played in a game, right? Not one journey. That's a manipulative thing to say in a press conference. It manipulates the environment because you go, I don't know all the 64
Correct, yeah.
that you've played.
Yeah.
And it means you'd have to go back through the 90 minutes mm-hmm. in that exact moment and, you know, kind of pick it all out. It's almost like a bit, there's some poker players I've known who are a bit similar to that, mm-hmm. but he's manipulating I guess, you know, sometimes he's massaging, sometimes manipulating. You're manipulating the people you don't like or are working against you, and you're massaging the people who work with you, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I guess that makes you someone incredibly powerful with your environment, especially if he can manipulate narrative. Mm-hmm. And it seems as if he's really done that with Arsenal.
There's been one of the things that I see at other clubs now, and I think that's a shame, is that, for example, at Manchester United, which yeah. we don't want to necessarily get into, but it's that inability to control the narrative.
Yeah.
It's that inability to control the narrative around the club. And I think there was times at Arsenal, especially during Arteta's reign, and he has made mistakes, where he didn't control the narrative. Mm. And I think that's something he's got better at over his reign, is control. For example, William Saliba. Mm. When Saliba was going out on loan, and there was like a time when his paperwork wasn't filed at the end of a transfer window, so he didn't, you know, there's all this sort of stuff. All he needed to do was say in a press conference, we believe in Saliba, we think he's a brilliant player, all good. Mm-hmm. And there was times I was crying out for that. But for example, I said on a podcast recently, I was like, the thing Arteta needs to do in the next press conference is defend Havertz. Does it. Because, and it's not, I told him to do that, therefore he will. But I felt...
Didn't you?
Maybe watch some of this.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't. But he... I felt... which may not be right, but I felt the next thing he needs to do is come out to bat for Havertz and change that narrative mm-hmm. and get... And I posted the clips online, and I watched as Arsenal fans online, which is always a difficult place to take a sort of temperature or a litmus test from, the Arsenal fans online, which I think is a very different community, I saw immediately, yeah, the manager said it, back the manager kind of thing. And I think he has, again, coming back to it, that understanding of not only the understanding of tactics, not only the understanding of communication, the understanding of the temperature of the room.
Yeah.
The right. understanding of like how to, you know, those people who are just like brilliant minds, but socially inept.
Yeah.
Like have no sense that someone, you know, doesn't want to, is having a bad day. So they, you know, they can't see that, or they are unable to respond to what that person needs.
Some managers have that, but some people love to be managed in that way. Rafa Benitez comes to mind for me at Liverpool. Like, you know, Gerrard and Carragher always talk about mm-hmm. he didn't seem to be able to communicate with yeah. us and like connect.
Yeah, yeah.
Arteta seems almost the complete opposite of that, and mm-hmm. I think a huge amount of the narrative when he first came in from City was I think there was a narrative of some sort that like, Sterling really liked him.
Yes.
Zinchenko really liked him. Gabriel Jesus really liked him, which is why he came in the end. And there was kind of the simplicity of it was like, oh, he puts his arm around them and they kind of like that. But obviously it's more than that. There's something completely, you know, 10 times more in depth than that. How much of that do you think we ever even witness? Do you think we even see any of that? Because I struggled to find it, but I was like, well, it must exist because, you know, the players talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it must do. And I think that I also have to accept that there are so many limitations. We're working with scraps in terms of data. We are working with scraps in terms of what we know. There was a moment in the Declan Rice announcement video where he goes into the office and they shut the door and it just cuts. And you're like, We will never know. Mm-hmm. We will never know what is said in that room.
Well, until the Declan Rice autobiography, which is then you can't go back and adjust your video you made 30 years before that.
Yeah. So, you know, and like there's obviously lots of things where he did an interview with Jamie Carragher where he talked about, he was saying like, you know, that Carragher was talking about the documentary and he was saying like, yeah, but that all worked last year. What I did then with the light bulb and whatever, which is you can clown, is kind of slightly David Brentish. And,
Did you think it came across Brentish?
This is a broader conversation around what we as, let's call it non-footballers and footballers, would respond to.
Right.
These are highly trained millionaire athletes who, if I had a screensaver that said something like, you are a lion, fear no sheep or something, you'd be like, what are you doing? Mm. But for Declan Rice, like if that gets him into the mindset, then fine. And I think like we watch things like the light bulb stuff. Ultimately, if that goes out and does the result and the players are responding in the way he wants, then who are we to say, well, it's a bit Brentish? Because probably if you go into an office and do that, like, guys, we're going to do this, you're like, God,
what the hell chill are you talking
out
about?
But in a before a game where you're going out in front of 60,000 people, that's probably gonna, I'd be going, yeah, let's do it. So there's different
stakes as well to an extent, like going into that. That's partly why the David Brent thing works how it works, is because he is so overly invested in the company, so overly invested in all these other things, so overly invested in himself and in what he believes he can do. Obviously, if you then compare Mikel Arteta to David Brent doesn't stand to make millions of pounds from being, I mean, he thinks he does, but he doesn't stand to make millions of pounds from the outcomes of selling paper.
And, like, and won't have a curly-haired idiot on a podcast dissecting every moment he does. Do you know what I mean? So you're right, the scrutiny is very, very different.
But and the level that you benefit from it. Like if you are already a millionaire and you've had a relatively comfortable life, which I don't think Declan Rice has always had a comfortable life, but I'd imagine a lot of these guys have known a level of comfort from a certain age because they've been wrapped up. Those kind of things, just from purely being insulated from the world and sometimes just a depth of like, I find a lot of the time people sort of go, don't ask that to the player. Not because they won't, I'm not saying because they don't have the intelligence to, you know, kind of go into a philosophical depth. But I just think a lot of the time people are like, don't stimulate that part of the brain, because at the moment he's scoring goals or at the moment he's tackling at just the right moment. We don't want to kind of break him out of that mental cycle that he's in, you know? Mm. And if you go in and go, have you ever thought about God?
Yeah.
Like those guys go,
they just look like,
home and go, should God. I think about God? Is that what I need to be doing? And I'd imagine like that's partly why to us in the everyday world where we were listening to 50 different podcasts or whatever, some of these guys don't need that. They don't even want that. Maybe they've never even thought about that because their intelligence might be coming from a different place.
It's context, isn't it? And in the end, it's what we're doing here, we're obsessed with the game. We're obsessed with it. Are we obsessed?
Like, so do you ever wonder what Mikel Arteta would say? Sometimes in my videos, I say, if Jurgen Klopp watched this video, he would laugh. Now, obviously, what I'm trying to say with that is, how ridiculous is it that I'm sitting here and going, Klopp played that midfield today. What an idiot. And then the funniest thing is the comments go, mate, Jurgen Klopp's not watching a video. I go, that's not my point.
Yeah, I'm not saying
that. My point is not that he watches and gets a good laugh out of this. My point is he has a billion data points that he's reading. He's reading their face. He's reading their body language. He's going into the back room and his analytics staff are going, you know, in training today, he went into the red zone or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What do you think he'd think if he watched your videos?
He'd absolutely cook me. He'd absolutely cook me.
Oh, absolutely. So even though your heart's in the right place and you're at least trying to sort of see where he's going, like you at least are going, what is his North Star? You're not going, this is terrible.
No, I hope he'd say, I can see the effort that's gone into this.
Right.
But in terms of the football ideology, when you're aware that there are, to even at the base level of football, there is like 40-page dossier documents on opposition, mm-hmm. breaking down every single phase of play, every single... You have to understand that...
What size is the type on that?
Yeah, size 48 font.
Because I do sometimes wonder whether if I flick through it, I go, a lot of it, you just said they've got a back four here. Yeah, like, what are you doing? Do you know what I mean?
You have like someone whose entire job is an attacking phase. I think he's called Tekka's Guru at Arsenal.
I've met him.
Have you?
He's a lovely guy.
Is he?
Yeah,
great.
He used to play for like hashtag United and stuff.
He did. He's now attacking phase coach at Arsenal.
He's a really smart guy. Way smarter than, you know, I think most people would have given him credit for if he'd ended up as an influencer, which is what he was.
Yeah.
And I think for a while he was like a technical... he was a guy who'd go to shoots and sort of train the players how to do, you know, like cool keepy ups and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he kind of just got like weirdly sideways.
Good for him, man. That's great.
He's a lovely guy.
Good.
Credit. I didn't know that was his role now. That's insane.
I think I'm right. I'm sure I'll get told if I'm not.
Lovely hair.
But, yeah.
He's got great hair.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, when you're aware that that is his entire job, my thoughts in a couple of minute YouTube video on like, oh, I think we're entering the final third in a bit too wide at the minute.
The U-shape of doom
U-shape of doom, whatever, which a fan will go, oh yeah, I can see that as well. That's my level. I think, and I think like, that's why I attribute the word genius, to come back to it, is like, because when you can, and also what you were saying about knowing when to slight, can I swear?
Yeah.
Knowing when to slightly get your dick out and be like, right. I know what I'm doing. Like, for example, if someone was like questioning you about like directing or like, I don't know, you seem to know a lot about cameras. You have a lot of cameras.
A little bit.
Someone questioned you about cameras and you went, oh, actually, that's an EOS. You know, you're just going,
just back off.
Just back off a sec because I know what I'm doing. And I read it personally, which people may disagree with. I read personally that he feels slightly back against the wall. He changed he changed the way he was approaching it in terms of saying, my team and I played this.
Right.
I read that as slightly back against the wall because I said it is very collective. He's very, very collective, usually. And like, there's a question before, he talks about Eddie Nketiah. And Nketiah, he's asked about whether you take any personal pride in Eddie's England call-up. And he says, you know, we all take our coaches, his family, he's really doing that. And someone asks about his thing and he goes, I did this. So I read that as he's slightly just going, hang on a minute, I can see what's being written. And you read around and you see interviews and stuff and you can see that he feels, possibly understandably, because when you're an eighth and you're being questioned, your tactics are being questioned, you probably feel, yeah, fair. When you feel like you've proved yourself to some degree against, and it, not totally, but in one way, against, in my opinion, the best team to ever play in the Premier League, or one of the best teams to ever play in the Premier League.
You didn't beat Liverpool.
Centurions or the treble winning team, whatever. He probably then feels like, do you guys not think I know what I'm doing?
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Really?
Yeah. Like, and also the guy who runs that team, which is probably the best Premier League team, or the most empirically successful Premier League team, we'll put it that way, goes, nah, this guy's really smart.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
That there's got to be a point.
Scored. He's rubbish.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. Well, just get rid then.
Yeah.
That's, and obviously your plan of bringing him in doesn't work nearly as well because on FIFA, I don't play him where you play him.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Which also is hard because it's trying to find the balance of like where we can critique. And as fans, like it's, I hope I find a balance of, here's my thoughts of what we're doing. Here's why I feel that is going wrong. Should you trust me? And is that the level of they're thinking at? No. But both can stand at the same. Do you know what I mean? So
I totally get it.
Fans, we can go, yeah, I can see that. Da, 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 and we probably will come to things about, you know, challenges or whatever. But I just think I am aware from my own football journey, like in 2018, I'd be speaking with the exact same level of confidence.
Right.
And in 2026, I'll be looking back at this going, you idiot.
Yeah.
You are aware. You're constantly on a journey of growth. You are always. So I think any sense of like, this is the fact. That really hurt.
This is the
really loud. In the studio is really loud.
This is the fact. I shy away from personally.
I understand that. I think you're very good at unpacking what you observe and presenting those. You must come from an academic background of sorts, or kind of, because a lot of your caveats feel quite academic.
Well, I did therapy for 2 years.
As in you gave it to someone else, or you...
About Arsenal. It was to Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, wow.
I did therapy for 2 years from 2020 to 2022, and I'm back in therapy now. And it is the best thing in the world. Yeah. If you find a good therapist, it is like, it's just A1. And the big thing that came home to me was around perception. I can never know what it's like in your mind. So if you say something is true, okay, it's true to you. Like I cannot see in your mind. There is, you could argue, and I do believe, and some people don't believe, that there is no objective truth, because that we can access from a personal perspective. Maybe there is a objective truth that we're connected to, if you believe in that, like high consciousness or whatever.
Yeah.
But the personal self can only see your own perception. Therefore, that extent, and that was the big thing for me from therapy, and therefore that extends into football, and I go, I can only see this.
You have an awareness of that, right?
I hope so. And then therefore, if someone says this, that, and the other, that's fine, that's your perception. But what I try and do is go, however, I'm not saying this, I'm not saying this, I'm not saying this, because sometimes I think people fill in the gaps and get you wrong unnecessarily.
I find that a lot, actually. Yeah, I think a lot of, I think you've done that very, very well on your channel, especially of kind of expressing it with just enough caveats, but not to the point where you go, God, mate, all right, we get it. Like, there's, you know, you've caveated this like 9 times at this point.
Yeah.
And that is especially hard, I think, when trying to predict where something's going to go. It's a lot simpler, obviously, to go, of course they did this, or the box midfield is X, or whatever it is. Yeah, yeah. To an extent, I kind of feel like once something becomes evident to someone of our level of analysis, it's almost already on the way out. Like, it's like, you know, it's like when we're like high street fashion of the football world.
Yeah, yeah. That's such a good
maybe
analogy,
even a little bit beyond. Maybe we're sort of like, you know,
rich and
what your dad copied. Wears to the barbecue, and you kind of go, oh, that's cute.
Yeah,
he bought some Yeezys.
Yeah,
like that's kind of where we're at, I'd imagine, when you speak to Arteta or any of those guys. And you know, in the few brushes I've had with footballers, maybe I kind of felt similarly, where they kind of look at you a bit like, yeah, it's nice that you're trying to help.
Yeah.
But you have no idea what level we're operating on. Mm-hmm. And to an extent, like, I think there's a level of contempt sometimes. And I can kind of feel that bristling sometimes with Arteta. And so when you're successful, it really helps you because people go, God, the guy is a genius. Mm. When things start to go a little bit wrong or aren't so good, people almost start to go, your genius plan isn't working anymore, which is why I think he was very smart. And I just want to reference my notes here. Like, he was very smart when he laid out the five phases, and when he laid out almost a roadmap. Not that he laid them out and went, this is phase one, phase two. Although I don't know, how evident do you think those phases were? How much have you identified those five?
As far as I'm aware, he doesn't really talk about it. I think he's talked about it in an ESPN interview once.
Yeah.
And he talked about it with so obsessed with this man. And I think he talked about it with Jamie Carragher. But to be fair to him, I also, and again, comes back to it, I personally also, if I was in that situation, wouldn't be obvious about it, because then you just get Rod Heron back. You're just in a situation like that.
It's kind of helped him to some extent with where when people go, oh, they're ahead of the plan, because that's obviously then you feel like you're moving faster than you need to. To an extent, it gives you a ready-made excuse. To an extent, he's also giving the press something to write about,
right?
But he's not giving them so much that they can make that Rod.
Yeah, and it's in a packaged way that is understandable.
Yeah, totally understandable and totally achievable. So he's not gone, we're going to win the... Obviously, he does want to win the league, but he's not gone, we're going to win the league, because then every year people go, you haven't won the league. They go, oh, is he at... What phase is he at of trying to get to win the league? Where do you think... What phase do you think you're in?
I don't I think he said in December 2022, he said we're a little bit ahead of phase three.
Yeah.
My sense is that phase five is about sustainability, which is a word in football I think is going to be more and more popular.
So they'll just, what, like more emails, less printing?
Yeah. Reusable bottles. Yeah, that sort of,
yeah. Love that. Yeah. Lots of air up.
Fake plants, yeah.
Yeah.
Air up. So I think that'll be about sustainability. I think phase four is about getting over the line. So I don't think we're there yet. I think phase four is about that next step over.
And are you entering that phase, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably about by the phase four is this, and then by the end of it we'll have graduated into, like, once we've won a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
That's my sense. I don't know, obviously.
But when you say a trophy, you mean something that feels... Because obviously you want a trophy, yeah. You mean a significant...
The Premier League or the Champions League.
Yeah, you're talking about one of the big two, basically. Yeah. And there's a marked difference, I think, in team swagger when they do win those. I remember that with the Champions League for Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp. I remember that with... I even remember that, I think, with Rafa Benitez in Liverpool. And I think that was partly where people started to... The Wenger era started to tail off a little bit when it felt like a memory of winning one of those two significant trophies rather than... being in the just even being in the running for one of those two feels significant.
Yeah.
Which is why last year or last season I think felt so significant for you guys. Mm-hmm. How much do you listen? Do you at all consume any outside media of non-Arsenal people who are so mocking, so, I don't want to say like skeptical, they are so skeptical of Arsenal in general. And how much do you buy into it? How, you know, what's your perception of anyone who's non-Arsenal?
I think you can tell when someone has good intentions. I think you can tell when someone's desire is to build up, not tear down. And even if you disagree with someone, and I'm sure people will disagree with lots of things I say today, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I hope and I believe in media that builds up. And I think there's lots of stuff that I listen to that, like, you know, James Allcott, for example, is a great example of he's trying to construct something. He may not always think it's the best or good or whatever, but it's a constructive thing. I try and avoid media that is evidently there to
antagonize.
And that's a good word. And I think, like, to try and put Arsenal down. There's a specific person that I'm thinking of, but this is, I don't want to necessarily name check them, but there's a broader thing of if you want to, you can take everything Arsenal do as a negative. If you wanted to,
you could try.
You can absolutely do it. You know, for example, Nicola Pepe yesterday, when we were recording, he got released, and immediately videos drop, you know, this is a disaster, whatever. Or you can view it, you know, you can view it every which way, but I think you can tell when someone is looking at the algorithms, looking at the media space that we live in, and tailoring their response and approach to essentially shit on clubs, I think.
It's quite a short-termist approach, I think, because it really relies on clicks. It relies on people kind of buying into your quite myopic analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And to an extent, you're always going to be proven wrong because in the end, you know, Nicola Pepe might go somewhere else or whatever. And most of these videos are also extremely speculative, extremely free associative, which is kind of like, well, do you remember, you know, when the dip, like the end of Wenger, you know, well, Unai Emery, well, do you know, do you remember this player? Do you remember that player? And it's like, cool. Like, I did.
Yeah.
But I, the Arsenal banter era really... I didn't enjoy it at all.
Yeah.
I really loved Arsenal as a kid. I was a massive Liverpool fan, but I really loved Arsenal because I loved Wenger.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Henry. I loved that whole team. Yeah. That whole side were just so...
Yeah.
That was the first team that were not Liverpool that I went, oh, I really like you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember, like, you know, you... I don't know, you're a little bit... Actually, you're 10 years younger than me. But...
tried.
Yeah. But the annoying thing was they were everywhere. It was like Vavavoom was a Thierry Henry thing. Robert Pires was just all over, you know, like he was all over the place. He was being interviewed in all sorts of places. Freddie Ljungberg was ever in his pants. Like, and that was like a big thing. They were like sexy. And like, it was marketing wise, weirdly, it like really worked. And suddenly that just stopped with Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
And Arsenal fan, and you know, obviously you've got a lot of respect for Robbie, but the Arsenal fan TV era took you into a whole other time.
Mm-hmm.
and it was like everything shifted. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of wanted to, I was interested to know what you think about this. So I have this like belief that there is something special about Anfield. I do have a belief that there probably was something special about Highbury. To an extent, maybe the Emirates is kind of, you got to develop that, or you kind of have to like find the biting point. And I think fan collective minds do, I'm not saying in any magical fashion, but I mean, like, I think there is some sort of unquantifiable element to winning the league, which comes from...
That Barcelona game does not happen not at Anfield.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Right, okay. And that's, so you buy into it to an extent as well. I think you can very quickly also stop that, though. So it can turn off very quick as well. And it comes from that collective belief, collective buy-in, like just collective, sometimes some, like collective football knowledge. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those things can just be reawoken mm-hmm. by someone. And I think Mikel Arteta has kind of reawoken the right set of fans. Mm-hmm. And maybe to an extent, like help the ones who were more on the banter mm-hmm. wagon. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
Yeah. I think, firstly, just quickly on the media thing, I think I don't think any individual is really to blame, particularly. I'm not really in the world of like that person. I think realistically, we all need to eat. And I understand, like, there's people who just go, well, I make more money doing this. And, you know, I understand that. And I try and look at the broad economic perspective. I think
it's very Jordan Henderson.
We won't get into that.
No, not now, anyway.
Not now. But yeah, the Arteta point is a good one, because he's kind of, I think certain clubs have certain, you know, people say, you know, the Spurs way, and I'm like, what is the Spurs way? Like, it's just you haven't won a league title since the 60s, but there's an idea within every
pathetic little man.
get in.
Chelsea are similar. London in particular, it's very easy to pick them out because you're also at odds with each other, and all of you have to define your identity so aggressively.
That's a really good point.
So it's a lot easier to go, Spurs are this.
Yeah.
Also, if you know that part of London, you like, there's personalities in like, I just want to say the general Tottenham area where it's like, oh, you are such a Spurs fan. And it's similar in, weirdly, not necessarily in Highbury, but like when you meet an Arsenal fan, you know what they're going to be like. When you meet a Chelsea fan, you know what they're going to be like. Yeah. Fulham fans, mm-hmm. West Ham fans. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to see those personalities.
And you can see that, you see that playing out in the fan culture. I do think you can see that. And there are distinct fan cultures. I think specifically in like Liverpool's a very distinct fan culture.
Yeah.
And therefore, certain managers are Man United managers or Liverpool managers or Arsenal managers. And I think something that Arteta's bought is that integrity mm-hmm. and that kind of desire. Everyone, as you were sort of mentioning, grew up as an Arsenal fan on Arsene Wenger, who was, whatever you think of him, the most classy man. Never a bad word, never, apart from about Mike Dean, never a bad word, never calling anyone out in the comments, sorry.
There were no comments. Comments were developing. He was like, could he call someone out on MySpace when...
on Bebo, doing it. Yeah, changed his top friends.
On my MySpace wall today.
Mike Dean
Long.
But like, for example, there's this one press conference from Wenger that I remember that was like, shocking, because he went at a journo, and it was sort of towards the end of 2015-ish. I think it was when we'd gone out against Bayern and Blackpool and Bradford or something like that, and it was a 3B thing in all of the cups, and he went at a journo. And I went, oh, that's not Wenger. And I think it's not, and I love Wenger, but I think there is a class and tradition to Arsenal. There's so many stories, and I don't want to, there's certain things that are private that I don't want to share for certain people, but like, for example, I know that for a lot of POC fans coming to Arsenal in the 70s, that's where they felt safe. Right. And for me, I'm like, oh my God, I love that. That's my club. Like, that is my club and I love that. And there's certain things like that. There's the ways that they operate with fans around, like, you know, fan stories come out and then you hear that Arsenal sent them a letter and things like that. And, you know, maybe you get, you know, blinkers on that, every club does that. But I feel Arsenal are classy and quite traditional. You can even go back to Herbert Chapman, and you can go back to, you know, the floodlights and numbers. We're an institution, I think, in the marble halls and whatever. A lot of people love that, and I think there was a sense at Arsenal that tradition and integrity and the values of Arsenal had been lost. And I think that's what Arteta's brought. It's the values back of the honesty, of the sort of statesman-like security. You know, someone walks in a room and they've got it, and you can just get behind them, and you don't need to worry about. Unai, I always felt, is a I respect him so much, but he never had the communication skills to
he get. He was a prime minister, not a president.
That is a very good way of putting it.
And the way that your analogy, I think, works quite well with that, because Wenger was presidential in the way that he acted. Mm-hmm. Pep is like a UN type. Jurgen Klopp is very much like the charismatic German leader and, you know, at the center of the EU kind of thing.
He's the McKinsey consultant who rushes in and...
Yeah. No, but this is it.
Changes
right?
everything.
And it works. Yeah. And then I think Unai Emery was much more, you know, that maybe he would have suited a Luxembourg or something like that. And we would have, that's nice. And in that role, it works. Mm-hmm. But there are just certain... It just doesn't fit at the right time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm interested in. How much is Arteta an avatar for what Arsenal are doing? Because, you know, Kroenke's not exactly like, you know, angel number one in terms of sports franchises. You know, taking out the Rams out of a place and replacing them somewhere else is very unpopular in the first place. He's an unusual character, if rumours to be believed in the first place. But also the Kroenke family have had more success in sport recently. To an extent, I don't know how much you follow American football.
Not particularly.
So I don't know whether you've ever looked at the Rams. They really have a fairly charismatic young coach who's an avatar at the head of what's going on there.
Similar with the Nuggets as well. I think it's
Sean McVay. Obviously the Nuggets have got, I don't know who their coach is right now, but like things seem to be working quite well there as well. I wondered how much you kind of look at that level and how much that is kind of above Arteta almost. Mm-hmm. And then Edu kind of being, is he above Arteta?
Yeah.
Is he below Arteta? Well, do you know, like, how do you structure when you're, obviously you talk about Arteta a lot because you're talking tactics. Edu's not a tactician, I don't think.
As far as I'm aware.
Yeah. And I don't think Kroenke's going, you need to play a box midfielder, mate.
Yeah.
How do you see that structure working and how much is Arteta just an avatar of what is happening above him? Kind of, you know, Dark Hand, New World Order style, sort of.
Yeah, I think it's, again, it's dependent on the club and what works. And I think you've got to find what works for you. After Wenger left, we had a more of a sort of what might be called continental approach, where you had almost like split Wenger's job up into three with a head coach.
DOF.
I think he was like head of football, Haral Sanyehi, whatever that means, head of football, technical director, sporting director. It's all a little bit blurry. And then we had a CEO in Vinod Venkatesham. And now it feels a little bit more streamlined in terms of the executive stuff has all slightly changed. I just think basically this is a broader point around football. If you want a club to succeed, you have to get behind one ideology. Mm-hmm. Have to. It has to be streamlined and aligned under one ideology. And the ideology ideally has to be defined by one person who the fans can get behind. Mm-hmm. That has happened at Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp. That's happened with Pep Guardiola. That's happened with
Mourinho at Chelsea.
Mourinho at one point. That happened
Wenger,
with
Ferguson.
Ferguson. All these guys. When you look at, when you see, for example, Ten Hag, right? And they have, and I talk about this all the time, so people will be bored of me, but
I like it.
They have like a director of football negotiations, a director of football operations, a director of football data science, a director of da 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 da.
It's so bureaucratic, isn't it? It really is very like, it feels a bit old school now.
It does.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I think it's about points of failure. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's a higher risk strategy to go with a singular point of failure. But when you get that right, it can turn a club around so quickly because everything is under one roof.
Is the assumption not really also that the risk is spread at United? Whereas actually, I don't think the risk is spread as much as they would maybe like it to be. And actually, a lot of it still hinges on Erik Ten Hag. So as much as you can have all these different places, it still comes down to the point that you're talking about, which is you can centralize it. You can kind of, obviously there's a big point of pressure, but that's where you need to find that personality or that person. There's this whole thing that I heard not long ago, they big CEOs, you know, like the kind of the Disney CEOs, the big boys, when they're trying to appoint someone new, which is why Disney have got their issues now, because Bob Iger's back in and like, he was like, you know, this iconic Disney CEO. And there's some interesting profiles of him as a character, but like, they get questioned for like 8-10 hours at a time by people to see what their personality really is. Like, you know, it's easy to be a CEO of 20 minutes and be very, you know, presidential or whatever you want to call it. But to do that for 10 hours, to not, you can't have a veneer for that amount of time. I think that's where you see the real test of a manager. Like, over the season, the players get to observe that. And we don't really see that. Mm-hmm. We don't have that level of contact with them. Nope. We get the press conferences. Weirdly, we get like this. There's this, I love the quote of like, this guy's never been given a chance. I'm like, well, yeah, but you weren't in training for like 3 hours a week. If they, do you think that every week everyone just goes, don't train, we'll leave it until the 90 and see if he's good? Do you know? That's mental to me. Yeah. And a lot of that happened at Arsenal for quite a while because the fan-TV-ification of the whole thing was that, well, we see it in the 90 minutes. That's kind of been broken back down now. It's kind of wilted away to... actually, yeah, let's just trust him with his process or whatever that process is.
And I think, I think, in those, out of the 90 minutes, which, yeah, of course, are the most important, but out of the 90 minutes, you can watch how someone operates and you can see, you can just tell whether they're the right person for the club or not. And you're right that in an interview, you can come, it's that whole thing of like, you know, when someone's like, oh, yeah, they're really nice. And I'm always like, yeah, I mean, anyone's nice for 10 minutes. Like when you meet someone, anyone's nice for 10 minutes. Like it's when you are in adversity, when you're, the chips are down, how does someone respond? How does someone react? And that takes time. So that's hard to see. And you're right that that can come in. I do think like it's about being very clear on the responsibility. And I think, for example, maybe where Liverpool, I know obviously way less about Liverpool than you do, but from an external perspective.
I don't.
But for example, you know, I look at like the whole Michael Edwards thing and stuff, and it feels like the football ideas or the football, whose the responsibilities have been slightly blurred a little bit.
They've become unblurred now.
Right.
And, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. But for a certain period, they were
They were
blurred. And I think that happened with Arsenal. And now, you know, if you're a player coming to the club, if you're worried about playtime, you know where to go. If you're worried about your contract, you go to Edu. If you're worried about something commercial, you go to Vinay. I think if you take another club, Man City, you know, the Chicky Bergerestein and Pep, they are the two. And they, you know exactly who you need to go to for whatever it is. And I think it's the clarity of vision and the clarity of who's responsible. Because once you set up, if you're trying to run a house, right? Sound like Gary Neville. Ultimately, if you turn around a house,
mini holidays,
mini retirement. Honestly,
yeah, that was all AI. That's ingenious, really, isn't it? Yeah.
If you're trying to run a house and you've got one person responsible for the lounge, but actually under them they've got the sofa,
yeah,
they've got
TV, the sofa, yeah, right,
correspondent, and they've also got someone who's responsible for the flat surfaces and someone who's responsible for the rounds. So it may feel like you're adding more and more expertise, but what you're doing is you're adding points of failure, and you're also removing that level of responsibility where ultimately the buck stops with someone.
Yeah.
And then it's like, can that person take that responsibility? In Mikel Arteta's case, yes. If you said to Ten Hag, you're the guy now, I don't know enough about United, but if you went, we're getting absolutely behind you, whatever happens with the Sancho situation, we back you to the hilt. You are every single football, everything at this football club, from the transfers to the contracts to the whatever, you will have the final say on. Can he hold that? Some United fans think yes, some Man United fans think no. But the reason I think that project is ultimately, I'm going to get clipped on this, doomed to fail, is because there's still too many cooks. There's still not that sense of responsibility. So when things go wrong, you hear United fans, they go, it's the Glazers, it's the players, it's Ten Hag, it's Maguire, there's all of these things. If something goes wrong at Arsenal, Arteta, which is a good and a bad thing, but when it's going well, it means it can align under an ideology. When it's going bad, you can go, that's where we look.
And you're kind of making a rod for your own back in that approach if things go badly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the responsibility.
Gives you the power.
If you want to take it, then you take it. Is what you're basically saying. And he is taking it.
And he's taking it.
That's where I'm kind of interested then in maybe we're skipping a couple of steps ahead of where you are at the moment. You're entering, from my perception of the outside, you're entering phase four. Can you identify one and two? Was one just clear house sort of thing?
I think so. I mean, if I were to guess, which is a guess, I would say phase one was probably a sense of turning things around on the pitch, changing the values at the club, just basic things like you know, turning up on time and you know, all those sorts of things that had slightly gone by the wayside. I'm not suggesting anyone was deeply unprofessional, but
you really maintain those values yourself.
Yeah.
Do you ever take those? Do you ever look at what Mikel Arteta does and go, I should do that too? You were here dead on exactly when I asked you to be.
Are people normally not, or?
Oh, like sometimes, but you know, you can get lost or whatever it is. I was just very impressed that at exactly the moment when I said, be here, you went, I'm here.
I'm pretty, it's probably my mum. I think my mum views it as like personally disrespectful if someone's not on time.
She says it's a fogging disgrace.
Alex, you're on a fogging disgrace. Mum, why are you speaking Spanish?
Yeah, this is Mum, I love you, but this is insane.
But yeah, no, it's, well, that's, yeah. But I think in terms of the phases, I sense, and again, this is a guess, I sense there was a sense of getting things turned around on the pitch was phase one, and getting everyone moving in the same direction and being like, who's with me, who's on the boat? And also Arteta convincing the players, because he has to get into training. And as much as you can say for every single player, he has to look into everyone's eyes and go, I have a plan for you. Do you want it or not? Phase two, I think, was more about the squad, trimming the squad down, getting rid of certain players, implemented the ideology, changing things around the club, changing the atmosphere at the stadium was probably one of the first things. Because
how'd you do that? Sorry, like how? Like, and have you? And
that's a kind of you can get into a cart before the horse argument of like, well, the fans are giving us nothing. You have to start on the pitch. If fans are very fickle, which is a good thing and a bad thing, in that if they see what, which is valid, if you see what you want on the pitch, you will respond. If you don't, you won't. So it's that simple. It's if you give, and Arteta was saying this at the beginning, you know, he's now again changed his tune. He's now started to say, we need you today. He's asked things of the fans, but in the first instance, in the first couple of months he was in, he was saying, we need to prove to you.
Yeah.
We need to show you what we're about first, which is the right way around.
But there were, maybe from the outside, I remember there were a lot of questions around his football, weren't there? Some people were saying he was too conservative sometimes.
Yeah.
Or
there was a lot. There was a lot of stuff around him being like a robotic, but again, when you're implementing, as if I understand much about this, but from my understanding of football, when you're implementing positional play in that sense of, like, for example, Rob Holding spoke about it on a podcast recently,
the Timsey one,
which is great. You know, Arteta spent a lot of time going, when this guy, stopping the session and going, when this guy's in possession, he needs three options at all times. For example, ball goes out to the left back, what options does he need? And that's going to take time to get into the players' minds, into the players' bodies, getting the right players who can do that. So that roboticism, is that a word?
Yeah,
it is.
Sure. It is now.
It is now. When you have that roboticism, and we had this sort of 2021, sort of this U-shaped football, which was essentially just trying to get that right. And you're right, there was some criticism. Phase three, I guess, was about getting back into Europe, back into those types of conversations, getting
the Champions League, not
and getting those kind of level raising players,
playing two times a week in a very competitive environment, showing that you're kind of that level.
I think so,
because also then that enables phase four, right, which is to bring in, get other players from the outside sort of looking in and going, I could be part of that kind of thing. I think Arsenal became a bit of it's a destination again now, isn't it?
Well, if you're a young player, where do you want to go in Europe right now? Like, you're seeing a squad where 24-year-old players are being tasked with, you can go and win the league for me. Mm-hmm. And if you are one of those players in Europe, you look at Arsenal surely as one of those places. For example, for Declan Rice to choose Arsenal over Man City,
and a lot of other clubs, because for a while I think Manchester United were confident they were going to get him. Chelsea were confident they were going to get him. Yeah, like
there's Bayern were in for him.
But I mean, if you're him, are you really going to buy? You know, maybe you're not going to buy it at this stage in your career. Save that for the Kane years.
But also, that's a kind of the Premier League is the Super League kind of thing. But I think Rice sees it as, I can grow with this project. Same with Saka signing his contract. He spoke about that. He said something along the lines of, like, we're growing at the same time. Like, as my ambitions,
right,
my ambitions are being met by the club at the same time. Like, we're all moving in the same direction. So yeah, and then phase, I don't know what phase five would be. That's my best guess.
Sustainability and like the preparation, I guess. Then it's not a plateau, but you hope you plateau just at the top. But like, it's that you can keep that, a repetition of that kind of model.
Yep.
And possibly phase five has a nod to the future and kind of a transition away from me being Arteta.
Yeah, I think currently, and I don't know if you want to get into the on-field stuff, but currently we're kind of, he's spoken about this like whole idea of like A1, A2, A3, the plan.
I did want to know a little bit about this, because so plan A, plan B, plan C, saying A1, A2, A3, mm-hmm. you're just basically, what, I get it, but it's a great reframing, really, yeah. of... it's a really good shift in yeah. In mentally how you look at the way you play football, right? Mm-hmm. Because saying ABC is a very interesting way of grading things. Mm-hmm. Saying A1, A2, what you're basically saying is we're becoming more adaptable rather than... If you say A and B, to me, B means something almost completely different
Correct.
To A.
Correct.
What he's basically saying is the core philosophy at the club is becoming ubiquitous to mm-hmm. a degree where mm-hmm. that means that now we don't need to go to B. We Correct. Never need to go to B because of this. But then the way you're speaking, the way you spoke on one of your, I think your last YouTube video was in, through, or over.
Is yeah, that means that's I think that's coaching terminology I picked up. That's yeah. that's more of an idea. I think I have an analogy around craft beer.
I'll go with you.
yeah.
God.
All right.
Where's he going?
So Arsenal, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's very North London. If you're a small craft beer company and you have one, if you're BrewDog and you're like, we have Punk IPA and that is working for us. And then you get a competitor who comes in. Let's say your IPA is like a grapefruit thing and you get your grapefruit costs have to go through the roof because your supplier falls down or something
right
like that.
Yeah, yeah
you've got one thing that is really working and flying off the shelves, but it's not sustainable and it's very it's not resilient. If you're AB Hausen or whatever they're called, that company that owns it, doesn't matter if the pandemic happens and people stop drinking Corona, because you own Budweiser, you also own Foster's, you also own Carling, you also, I don't know what they own, but they own basically everything and have stakes and everything. It's about becoming resilient. And I think it's about that thing. I think you're right to pick up on that, that plan B is like, let's be ridiculous and say, you know, it's going from possession football to route one as an example. I think he's now saying, we want to play the same way, but that whole 4-3-3 formation is the thing that we spoke about earlier. Within a game, he wants to become resilient to be like, okay, a game against Man City is a perfect example in the Community Shield. Rodri drops back into the back line. Havertz changes his position. I imagine he's thinking that's formation one. Haaland changes which centre-back he's occupying, formation two. And it's about not having the coach, especially early doors, Arteta was constantly in communication with his players saying, do this, do this, do this, do this. It's about being resilient to any type of game, any type of football, mm-hmm. which takes a long time. It takes football ideology, it takes tactics, it takes a squad who can do that, it takes a team who can understand that, it takes loads and loads of things. But I think this thing is now the sustainability is not only looking to the future in terms of like Man City, didn't they sell like a academy grad who'd never made an appearance for like 20 million or something?
Yeah, something that was this summer or something.
That's sustainability. That's sustainability. But I think that there's that part of it in the youth football and the kind of football ideology through the, like I have a friend, Aaron, who went to see the U21s and they play the same way that we do. But then on the pitch, that sustainability is about understanding the players not needing to think, what will Arteta say? When this happens, you do this. And that's resilience. That's ability to whatever's happening, whatever they do, whether they move, they change to two tens or in a game, understanding, okay, the fullbacks come inside and they're pushing on their centre back. What do we do there? Having every single game plan in your arsenal, haha, to be able to do that is what sustainability is, in my opinion. And in my opinion, that's what he's aiming for.
And to an extent, I'm interested to know what you think about where football is kind of going, because it kind of matches up to what his phases are, right? Like he will have need to have worked out where formationally things mm-hmm. are going in the next however many years to work out which players he needs to do what. Yeah. Otherwise, you don't spend 100 million on Rice. Mm-hmm. If it was as simple as you can just coach a player, then why spend the 100 million on Rice? There's a reason you spend that money, right? Mm. And it's not just to impress the fans and show them that you've got intent.
Statement signing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We need to make a statement. You've got to spend 100 million on someone. Like, that's not how that works,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I'd love to know what your theory is about this. Like, because the box midfield sort of became a bit of a thing last year and you guys were quite a big proponent of that. It's the first time it became like, oh, look, they're doing this sort of thing there. I sometimes wonder whether coaches get together at some sort of conference and go, where is all this going? Like, yeah. you know, and how much they share ideas,
yeah.
who influences those ideas and where they go. who influences our understanding of that? Because there was that, was it Fluminense or Flamengo video that went around not long ago about
relationism
yeah. versus yeah. position?
Positional play. Yeah,
yeah positional the, play.
Yeah, two different ideas.
Positionism or position, yeah, whatever you want to call it. And suddenly everyone started talking about whether that, that was a bit of a, whether the Premier League sort of moving in that direction a little bit. Yeah. Like how, I guess I'm just interested in your take on that and how coaches, who is it that's kind of coming up with this stuff? And why is it that Mikel Arteta doesn't go, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to do, why would we do the box midfield? And why does it almost move so slowly? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It moves very slow. Like if you can counter the box midfield so easily, mm-hmm. but maybe you can't, why not? Why is there no coach just sort of going, we're just going to do this? Maybe De Zerbi's that. But you get what I'm saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, in all my coaching experience, Lawrence, I'd like to...
But you do look at all of these recurring things.
You can see it. Yeah. You can see it. And I think, like, for example, it's interesting you mentioned the box midfield because that is a way of viewing it. Mm-hmm. A lot of fans that I speak to don't view it that way, which I don't think is wrong. They view it as a front five and a back five. Or you can view it as pods. Or you can view it, you know, you can view...
Or 3-2-2-3.
Any way you like, honestly. Right. And... I think
how do you see it?
I personally am more whatever I see in the game. Sometimes that's a pod game. Sometimes that's an 11v11. Sometimes it's a 1v1. Like it just depends what it is.
A1, A2, A yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I for me personally, but there are some people who, there's a guy who I constantly shout out, Clive Palmer on the Arsenal Vision podcast, who is amazing. You should get him on here. He's
never come and talk to me. He doesn't know who I am. Yeah.
Sure he does. Yeah. He's a top guy, and he talks about pods, and like that's his big thing. So that's his thing. And then, but you know, he's also mentioned also he's changed, you know, at times to be like, actually, I'm now seeing this more of a front five and a back five. Right. I don't think there's any right way of seeing the game. I think the point about where football's going is an interesting one. Declan Rice. The reason you go and spend that money on him is because, for me, he is an all-phases midfielder.
Right. He's not a six. He's not an eight. He's not a ten.
He can do anything.
And, yeah. Which is why then Chelsea spent that money on Caicedo, which is why Liverpool bid that money on Caicedo, which is why everyone wanted Bellingham,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is why those guys are those people.
Yeah.
Question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there no way of adapting someone you already have? Probably. And maybe you don't have anyone like that. To be that instead of spending the 100 mil?
Probably. But also it's like, okay, so for example, with the Rice signing, I look at that and I go, this is a guy who has absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
The physical capacity, the technical capacity. There's this weird narrative around Rice that he can't pass the ball. And I'm like, have you watched a comp of him?
Who said that?
I don't know. There's people who like...
It's definitely Twitter.
They just... Yeah, yeah. X.
Yeah.
They watch...
It's Twitter, mate. I don't know what you...
Bit weird.
I'm always going to tweet. I don't know what your issue is.
But they... Yeah, like... I don't know. I think it's because he played at West Ham. But like, you watch his switches and you can see he can do that.
Yeah, you bought him partially because of that range of passing.
No, honestly, mate,
and also, not only that, but like, it's so interesting. I was trying to quantify... I want to come back to a point you're making, but I was trying to quantify what makes a good defensive midfielder the other day. And I think Liverpool were really going for someone who can make standing tackles. They didn't mm-hmm. have to go to ground. And loads of people have gone for that recently. That's why people love Caicedo.
Yep.
That's why people essentially like Bellingham, is mm-hmm. because he's physically turns away very quickly. Mm-hmm. That's why Liverpool maybe like Bicetic. That's why they like Dendo. You know, there's loads of different examples of that, right? That's what, but I was also like, but there's blocks, there's, you know, sliding tackles, standing mm-hmm. tackles, interceptions, all these kind of things. That's what I found really interesting was mm-hmm. it's not only saying his passing is good is a ridiculous thing to say to about someone. Of course his passing is good.
He's probably a footballer.
He's a footballer, yeah. mate. Saying though, we like the way, like how quickly the ball reaches the other player after he's made the pass. That's why I like Virgil van Dijk so much. That's why Liverpool like Virgil van Dijk so much.
Pass. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the very intricate detail about how the football arrives at the other player, how quickly it arrives, his decision making speed, all these kind of things. Yeah. So to say he's a bad passer, maybe a specific kind of pass he cannot play.
Yeah.
But to say he's a bad passer in general is mental.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I just think...
I do know.
I'd rather... those people, that's their prerogative because, you know, they're not... Then some people just want to watch the football on the weekend, get drunk, get angry, and then go home. and not think about it for the rest of the week, and that's fine.
Do you think that happens?
Yeah, yeah, I really do.
They don't
want
to think about it for the rest of the week, so they don't watch you.
Probably there's some football fans who don't watch me. Weird.
Yeah. Alex mused and then quit.
Yeah. yeah. Quote.
Yeah.
Yeah. I genuinely think there are some people who just, they just go, just, you know, and you, those people get clowned and like, you know, oh, keep it simple. Don't. But I'm like, but also if it, some people don't spend all their time like already worrying about whether we're going to play this way or that way. And that's fine. And I'm like, do you know what? That's absolutely fine. So I just let them, for me personally, I try. I don't always, because I sometimes do bike and I see it and I go, oh. But I also see, as I said earlier, like I look back at the way I used to view football and think, and I know that I'll look back at myself now in five years and be like,
when you're assistant coach at Arsenal.
When I'm assistant coach at Arsenal.
Insane. I get what you're saying. So sorry, I cut you off about the Declan Rice thing, because I'm really interested in hearing how your midfield works. The 2-5 thing is, the 2-5s is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, you can view it any way you like, but I think the thing with Rice is, because he has everything you could possibly, he has transition control, he has progressive passing, he has switches, he can receive it off the back line, he can drop into the back line, he can press foot, he can do absolutely everything.
Does that nice turn thing.
Oh, it's lovely. Great guy. And he's got the leadership as well.
The personality is a big part of it as well, I think, right?
Big part.
Because Xhaka left.
He grows into games.
Yeah.
He's got everything. So then you can go, right, Declan, this game, we need you to drop into the back. Say, for example, Saliba's injured. We really miss a central centre-back. Then you can drop in Declan Rice and he can be your central centre-back in possession. It's different. You know, it becomes a little bit, the messaging becomes a little bit muddy, but I do believe in that idea of like, it's different things for different games. This is why on the goalkeepers as well, I have a theory about the goalkeepers. I think that we're going to see, if you're in a game, if you're away at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea's only way of getting at you is through counterattacks. Mm. That is the game for Aaron Ramsdale. Because for me, Aaron Ramsdale has this ability to pull out these ridiculous saves after not being used all game.
Right.
He's got the long range passing. He can keep it simple. He's got that away for some reason. His form is incredible. If you're playing Brighton, they're high pressing you in the box and you want your keeper to be a spare man, stick Raya in there. And I think we'll sit, because he...
How long does that last though is a question.
It's probably not sustainable for years, but for this year, I think it could possibly happen.
And to an extent, it gets the opposition sort of going, they're playing this guy today, or like, they're playing that guy today,
for different reasons. If you want sidewinders into the midfield, Raya. If you want that, like that pass into, I don't know, if you want to hit someone long distance, like we did in the Community Shield, Havertz, you could play Ramsdale.
But Raya kind of had that like pass. I remember when
to Tony,
just over and over and over and over and over again. I see what you're saying. I think that what's also interesting is people speak about football formations as if you have to then play that for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So they speak about it as if Liverpool and Arsenal still have to play 4-3-3 like they did even two seasons ago, and just go, well, that's how we'll always set up and that's how we'll always do it.
They play 4-3-3.
Yeah. But then, and then also like the, there are a lot of coaches now who are maybe not anti-positional, but they don't really play positionally. Mm. Like Erik ten Hag is definitely one of those. And I think that's what makes him quite difficult to analyse sometimes.
Well, I guess some people say he does and some people say he doesn't. And that's the that's the beauty of football, is that you view it like that and you're not wrong. And this is the thing, is people go,
but am I right?
Well, you are. I think you're right. I think you could view it as Ten Hag is a transitional team. He doesn't play football. He said himself that he's a transitional, like he wants to be the best transitional coach in the world. Or you can go, what are you on about, Lawrence? He came from Ajax. He played positional football. Look at this single clip where he does it. And this is the future of football, in my opinion. The best teams will be the ones that can adapt to every situation while retaining an identity. That's what it is.
That's reflective of... I've got this kind of thing. There's a notepad that I've got and I just keep... I'm trying to take a lot of like social theories and make them into football theories for videos. I don't really have a channel for it yet.
Count me in. I'll be bang up for that.
Well, one of them was... there's a few of them, but one of them is this idea that Pep is a thief. That what Pep's actually doing is just going back and going, they did that in the 60s.
Yeah.
Let's take that from the 60s. Big man, little man. Is he trying to make Alvarez the little man? Is he trying to make Haaland the big man? All these kind of things, right? Or is he, for a while, everyone was like, WM is back, or whatever it is. And, you know, again, that's down to Pep. part of this is now going back to the 70s for me, when Liverpool had Bob Paisley. I don't know who the manager for Arsenal was at that point, but if Bob Paisley wanted to play, you know, passing football, you could do it. If you wanted to play tough man, you could do tough man. If you want to do this, you could do that. And I feel like we can't, there's these cycles of football when we just keep going around. And obviously in different eras, there's different levels of fitness. I totally see what you're saying about the adaptability. It's been interesting to watch coaches adjust to that and who's adjusted well and who's struggled to adjust. I think Liverpool struggled to adjust. Klopp struggled, or at least the Liverpool team struggled. And it's interesting to see now the footballers that are struggling, the footballers that are thriving, and the kind of, I think it takes you back to why you would then buy Rice, right? Because there is a natural decision-making and reading of the game.
That is just the best, one of the best.
Can you do that with a 30-year-old? Could you have done that with Xhaka? Probably not, because he's already got the decision-making mechanisms that are so hardwired in. There's something a bit tragic about that as well, though, isn't there? Where it's like, oh,
old dog kind of thing.
Yeah, old dog, new trick. Like, that is quite, there's something quite sad that I felt a bit, not sorry for them, but I was like, oh, your decision making and thoughts are so fixed.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other podcast. But yeah. But I think really, if you have a foot, let's say you have the best football ideology in the world.
I do.
And you do.
Yeah.
It will still have ways you can get at it.
Right.
So the maybe the best thing you can be is adaptable. Because then even if you have the best football ideology in the world, you can also slightly adjust when teams are targeting your weakness. Maybe that's the future. I don't know. I don't fucking know. But like, maybe that's the future of football. But I see it with Arteta. I can see, you can see it with Pep. He spoke about it last season. He literally openly said, which is part of the reason I love him, is he's so open about it. He said the way De Zerbi presses, I've taken. He said the way Sacra Martinelli attacked my fullbacks, I went, oh, I need to change. That's why he's the best, because he sees things, doesn't pretend he knows everything, and takes it in. That's adaptability.
Pep
that's,
is a thief.
Yeah,
but in the best way. Like, you're stealing like an artist or whatever that phrase is from that book. Yeah.
And aren't we all? Like, everyone.
No, of course. In
every point I have has been basically,
I'm stealing a living.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah.
It's basically been made by someone else. We've gone, oh, yeah, and that reminds me of this.
Right.
That's what creativity, in my opinion, is what creativity
and
is.
And that's where Pep is truly brilliant. That's probably what he saw a lot in Arteta.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you combine that with personality, and it's and also a moment. Like, sometimes you, like, Unai Emery might be the right coach for Arsenal in however many years. But he might never be the right coach for Arsenal, purely because of the timeline sort of thing. I kind of feel that way about a lot of Chelsea managers, where I'm like, oh, you were like Poch, it's like a bit questionable at the moment. Like, is he the moment, for is the right moment going to fit the man
ideology?
Yeah, like, that's interesting to me. I'm so fast. That's where I'm kind of interested to see where you go post Arteta, because he's such a big piece in the club. What I found fascinating was the quote he put up at Arsenal, Arsene Wenger, on the wall.
Yep.
Is that next to the tree at Colney?
Like, there's a dog and the tree. And
yeah. Well, the dog is a fascinating one in the first place, right? But like, the tree that is up on the
dog. Call it the win.
And the players love the dog. And like, the dog, obviously the dog love them. Yeah. But like, there's the tree on the wall at the training ground. Yeah. And that is referencing an Arsene Wenger quote.
Something like that. I don't know what the quote is, but the tree was about the roots of the club, and then the branches, you know.
But again, what I mean by that is,
sorry to interrupt you, but some players will walk past that and go, and some players, just before they go out, will go, yeah, that makes sense to me.
But maybe some of it is osmosis, that the players, even who don't acknowledge it and stand and read it, just go, over time, the tree is there. Everyone's suggestible to an extent. It's like a Darren Brown type thing where it's like, you know, the number six is everywhere, and suddenly you think number six is important. Yeah. Like, what I mean by that is, some people were so eager to rid the club of Wenger and go, you know, no more Wenger stuff around. And he went, no, let's put a quote up on the wall from this guy. And that is what we want to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's so, I don't know, there's something so interesting about that. Do you know what I mean?
And there's the, with the Pep being a stealer thing, I don't know what the quote is, but I can't imagine it'll be Wenger having a go at that journo. It'll be something about class and the history of Arsenal. And that's what, when you're looking at Arsene Wenger, you go, yeah, there was some stuff down here, but what he did really was this. Let's take that and move that forward.
Right.
And that's, again, you've got to steal. You've got to be someone who can go, that idea, that idea, that idea.
Right. And I'm, I'm interested to know then what like where it goes, and whether you whether the belief levels have dropped just a little bit this season, or whether the belief levels really were as high as people. How do you gauge it? What are you, and what are you using to gauge it?
I suppose I can only speak for myself. I feel my prediction is that City will win the league, because I still feel Arsenal are. I think there's a, in 100 simulations, Arsenal would win the league a couple of times because they have the capacity to do it.
In 100, how many do you think you win?
15.
15?
Yeah. I don't
that's higher than I thought, if I'm honest.
Yeah. I just think...
The other 85 are City?
Yes.
Or is there any other club?
Oh, there's maybe two were United or something, or Newcastle. In terms of probability, I look at City and I just still think that is a prime age, experienced... I think the mental aspect of the game gets overrated a little bit by the likes of Roy Keane, because it's easy. It's easy to go, there's no characters, they've got no leaders.
Yeah, what he knows as well.
It's easy to say that, and rather than going, oh, the reason they got found out today was this. But I hear that, and I do think there is an element of that when you're approaching a run-in. Mm-hmm. As a player, if you've done that a few times, you just start to go, is that anything? It's like you going, if you've recorded a podcast 100 times and you're having a bit of a wobble and you're like, I forgot what I was going to say. If you've done it 100 times, you know it will come. Mm-hmm. So you, and it comes. But if you haven't done it, you're going, God, everyone's looking at me. Everyone's thinking about what I'm saying. And it's just experience. And we all know that. And I think that plays out, there is the whole thing of like City pick up no points and then just absolutely win like 15 games in a row towards the end of the season. And I just think Arsenal, we've actually got younger, and it's not to make it all about age, but like Erdegaard's 24, Rice is 24, Saka's 22 the other day, Martinelli's 22, Jesus is still like 26 or something, so like we're still a really, really young team, and we've actually got younger and taken experience out of the team, which is not to say it's bad, but we're growing together. Mm-hmm. And I still don't think that growth is going to be winning a title this year, personally.
It's also interesting because none of these players feel like they only work under Arteta.
Yeah, there's sustainability there. Yeah,
there isn't anyone there where you go, oh my God. Like there are, for a while, maybe there are certain, when Chelsea did a lot of rebuilds under Mourinho, it was like, you only work with Jose Mourinho,
Robertson only works with Klopp, in my opinion. Personally, player. I'm not saying he's a bad player.
No, yeah, I totally get that. But only works at his very peak under Klopp. I'm interested to see where he goes next, or kind of what his next thing is, and whether someone would sort of come in and go, I see you completely differently to the way that Klopp sees you. I think there's a sense of I'm interested to see where that comes with Arsenal. I think maybe to an extent, last season was a good thing for you guys because you had like a quite a big stumble, I guess. Is there still a bit of scarring around that? Because I'm interested to know. There's one game I went to the Liverpool game at Anfield when it was 2-2 in the end, right? I was very confused at one point, and I think all of Anfield was. I don't know if you're at that game, but the whole of Anfield was confused. We had created chances, but Arsenal had scythed Liverpool open, and it was so clear that at will they could just go through Liverpool. But it was also clear that if Liverpool got like timed it, they could punch Arsenal and knock them out. 10 more minutes in that game, and I think Liverpool win it.
Agreed.
But what was weird was when I did my video, like the post-match analysis, I did like a video at Anfield. Everyone was like, "No, we didn't see it that way. Like Arsenal were on top for so long, blah blah blah." But the feeling in the stadium, and everyone was like, why do Arsenal keep doing this thing that they're doing? They kept like trying a ball and Van Dijk kept heading it away. And everyone was going, Anfield was almost going, stop doing that. Yeah. Like, you don't do it that way. Yeah, yeah, that's really silly what you're doing there. And that felt very unusual to me.
Yeah.
For me, that was where I was like, have you gotten that out of your team yet? Where it's a bit like, in a roundabout way, I've kind of gone, how have you characterized that period? And do you think you needed to get rid of it? Or like, how do you think it appeared?
There's two players who, in that game, who spun it for me. One is when Xhaka got the crowd up with Trent. Because I think one of the big things about Anfield is it just gives you 2%. It just gives you 2%. And sometimes that's all you need to win a game. Mm-hmm. And
or draw a game.
Or draw a game.
Yeah, yeah. Felt like
And also there is another player who I call wrong profile, who means that you have to play a deeper line. And that drew them onto us. And that created, I think, a worry in our back line. And I think now what's happened is we've added more and more. Obviously, Timber's now injured, but you know, we've got Saliba and Tomiyasu back. That was a massively underrated part of our season.
Tomiyasu coming back was huge, because also Tomiyasu, when he got injured towards the end of last season,
he was the same game as Saliba. So this is something that massively gets underrated. If City lost Stones and Diaz mm-hmm. on the same game, what's that Gordon Ramsay meme where he's like, oh no, oh no, gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Arsenal lose Tomiyasu and Saliba, you donkey. Like, yeah. It is that. And like, I know no one wants to make excuses and it's boring or whatever, but I wonder whether the bottlers thing happens. Tomiyasu can play left centre back for Japan. He's played right centre back for Arsenal. He's played right back and he's played left back under Mikel Arteta. He's one of the most adaptable defenders in the world. He's not the best defender in the world, but adaptable.
And physically, he's like an absolute, like not a unit, but like he's got this core strength that just seems really annoying.
He's a big boy. And I just think those, for me, that was how I saw the game. But As you mentioned, you saw it in that way, and that's valid. And I don't know. I look back on those two moments, and I think we allowed the crowd to get involved in the game, which is something you can never do at Anfield, and we've done a few times now. And hopefully, and that's I've said there's 34 games Arsenal. I'm sure that we are the favourites, and we believe that we can win. There's four games,
right?
Anfield, City home and away, and Old Trafford, where we go with scars.
Right.
We go in, not, I don't believe we can't win them, as in, do we have the capacity again to win? Yes. But going into them, there's more questions than answers, is what I'd say. And I think at Anfield, I have a question around going to that ground and managing the occasion. That's actually almost the bigger thing at Anfield, managing the game, managing the situation.
Which he clearly gets, right? Because there was the whole, you know, you'll never walk alone thing.
Yeah.
But that will be one of like 50 different things he tries to do mm-hmm. to get the players used to that.
And at some point, you just have to go through a few bad experiences to go, no, this is the day we change that around. It looked like we were going to do that. And then there was a brief moment and then it all sort of crumbles down. And
that's Klopp though, I think. That's the other part, I think, was like where Anfield is really difficult mm-hmm. is like it can just like turn and the whole stadium goes, oh, actually this is on. That's where I think Anfield is particularly demoralizing in a different way to City, in a different way to Old Trafford. Mm-hmm. Old Trafford is I think massively underrated in the modern football era.
Yep.
It's such a horrible atmosphere to go to and it's so loud.
City lost there last year, didn't they?
Yeah. But I still feel like people just sort of forget.
Yeah, because United, like, rubbish.
Yeah.
So no, this is a tough place.
Really weird. Like a really weird thing is how quickly generationally things get lost. Mm-hmm. Like Old Trafford gets lost. I imagine some people who watch Arsenal don't even know what Highbury is.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
So they don't know that the Emirates was like derided when they first moved in there, and like people didn't like it.
But that has to grow. I saw someone say the other day, so embarrassing that they've only started singing that North London Forever song, now they're winning. And I'm like, well, one, it was written in 2022, so I don't know how we're singing a song that hasn't been released. And two, of course you only sing when you're winning. That's not the whole point.
Yeah.
You sing when you're winning.
Yeah.
Robbie Williams, what a tune. But the
now that will be something, if you don't know Highbury, you won't know that song.
Niche.
Yeah.
Or is it an album? An album.
It is, and it's him on the front with, he's holding the World Cup up.
I met him once. He was exactly as you imagine Robbie Williams to be.
Where did you meet him?
I was doing a show where he wrote the music for it, and that's he cool. shook my hand. But he came to see the dress rehearsal of it in shades and like a fur jacket, and I was like, you're just playing into it. And if I was in his position, I would. It's gone very off topic.
Got very off topic. That's I met Robbie Williams in his house.
Oh, of course you interviewed him.
It was a really weird meeting because he watched obviously we did the podcast.
Yeah, he knew. Yeah.
He watched the podcast, so he felt like he knew us.
Yeah.
And I was there like hours before anyone else was, weirdly, to set everything up. And he came downstairs in like a robe.
Yeah.
And he went, Lawrence. And I was like, It's weird that you know who I am.
Parasocial.
And then he smoked, and I just watched him smoke. And I remember just being like, this is cool. Like,
yeah.
I'm getting to like watch you smoke.
With Rob.
Yeah. And you're exactly like,
yeah.
in a completely lovely, sort of like brilliant way. I thought you would be exactly like you
and
are.
And he is.
And he is. Yeah. You're exactly like you are. Yeah. And he, but now he's a Tottenham fan. So.
Is he?
Didn't he do the Ange Postecoglou song? So,
oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And now Spurs love him and are sort of leaning into it.
Okay.
Because most of those people who go to Spurs are still dads, apparently.
Yeah. Old middle-aged mums.
Yeah. Spurs, have you ever been to Spurs' new stadium?
No.
It's a really good stadium.
It's good.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. it's been great to chat to you. I think I've actually like taken longer than I wanted
How long have we been?
An hour and 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
I flew by.
Pretty impressed. I know, right?
That's great.
But that's because you're interesting.
That's very kind.
Do you watch many other teams?
Yeah.
So I've got a question. I have this theory that you have to watch all of the team's games before you can evaluate them. So you, for a period, like you have to watch them. With Klopp, and I'll always do the Klopp thing so that you can do the analogy thing. It took a while for us to learn what it was that we clapped, or learn what it was that we go, that's what Klopp's looking for. We should encourage that.
Mm.
Did you have, that was kind of maybe a bit of phase one, and when you're talking about winning the players over and winning the fans over, where fans learn what the manager wants the team to do.
Yep.
And so that's what I always found this very frustrating from being on the kickoff was obviously a Man United fan, a Chelsea fan, a Newcastle fan, and a guest fan, very often the City. All four of them evaluated Liverpool by what they wanted their team to do.
Correct.
And I always found that very, very frustrating. And I imagine they found the same with me, where I was like, well, I wouldn't want, you know, this guy in my midfield. I want my midfield to be functional, sort of thing. Do you have the same thing with Arsenal?
Well, both of us at this point, at some point in the conversation, have said, I don't know much about your team, but...
Right.
Right. And I think there's a reverence I hope I have for other teams, and an understanding that... I think one of the limitations of modern punditry in the mainstream is that Gary Neville has asked his opinion. I think Gary Neville's a brilliant guy, by the way. I think he's a top guy. I think I really like him. And I think he's a really upstanding dude.
He does good business in the Middle East as well.
No comment. But he he also tries to comment on every team at the same level. And I'm like, mate, you run hotels, you run Salford City, you're doing MNF, you're doing all these things, even that I know about.
He owns Marks and Spencer.
Yeah,
he's that's incredible.
Yeah. That I know about. You've got kids, you've got like, you can't be
Does
watching.
Does he see them, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just like, honestly, please, right, I'm watching Arsenal. But you can't know every team. And like that, I've swayed away from approaching other teams because the only team I feel vaguely comfortable giving my thoughts on is Arsenal because I watch them.
Mm.
And even then I go, I don't, that's my opinion. I don't think it's objectively true. I just think, I hope media changes to the point where genuine people who are like actually watching every single game are the ones who are asked about every single game. Like that, because otherwise you can't put things in context. You can't go, oh, well, that happened here. You just end up relying on, well, they got no leaders. They got no, it's just.
Right. This will start our next podcast, which I will keep a limited amount of time, but I'd be interested to talk to you about this. So first of all, thank you very much. People want to go and see the different knock. I don't know why you should, I suppose people know what it is now. That logo you've got is, again, another old school logo. So if people don't know what Highbury is, they probably won't know what that TDK thing.
Yeah, I also think I need to change it because I saw someone. Someone sent me a picture of a van in London with my logo on it.
Yeah, isn't it? Do you know what it is though?
No, it was a dude. It was a dude on Fiverr. I think he's just given the same thing.
So I think that that logo. I feel like it used to be on. I don't know if you know VHSs.
Yeah,
really. Yeah. So I think I remember this logo from a VHS like sleeve from back in the day. And I thought that's what it was.
Oh, no. Okay. So people have said that to me before. Yeah.
So I wonder if it's like a haulage company or like some sort of like storage company or something. But I thought that was something you knew. And maybe this guy's just copied and pasted someone's logo.
I'll
and
do
just
a rebrand and I'll send it to you and you can approve it.
I don't need approval, but well, I would like to see it.
I need your approval.
Yeah, absolutely. well, if you do approve of Alex then yeah, go take a look at his channel. It's fantastic. Thanks. I watch it very, very regularly. You know, I'm cost cutting at the moment, so I can't afford to do the Patreon thing. But if there is a very good Patreon over there, by all
and subscribe to Lawrence.
Yeah, thanks.
That was great. Thank
yeah.
you, man.
And we'll be chatting on another video, another kind of shorter piece after this.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.